You're with SBS Radio.
Vous êtes avec Radio SBS en français.
Bonjour, Adam. Welcome to SBS.
Thank you. Thank you for having me in.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've got Adam Liao in the studio today. As promised, a little bit late, but that's not our fault. That's not your fault. You were here bang on time. Thank you for visiting SBS. I think it's not the first time you're coming to SBS, of course, but first time in Melbourne.
First time to the Melbourne studios, yes. I've done a lot of different SBS radio stations up in Sydney and, of course, the television side up there as well. But first time to the radio studios here in Melbourne.
Absolutely. Are you here to talk to us about a book, your sixth book today? I've got it here. I'm just trying to show it here. Destination Flavor, People and Places.
Yes.
It's a big book. Is that part of your autobiography so far in food?
It definitely is. You know, this is a compilation of the last six seasons of our show on SBS, Destination Flavor. So we've been through Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Japan, Australia twice, New Zealand, Singapore, and now China that hasn't even been to air yet. But all of that is now condensed and engrossed into a book.
Was it hard to put together and actually make a selection of the people you met and the recipes you came across?
It was so difficult, Christoph. I was lulled into a false sense of security because I thought, I've already written these recipes for the TV show. Therefore, it's going to be such an easy book to write. I just pick my favorites, put them into a book, and off we go. But it was so much more difficult than that. You know, the style of writing a recipe for a cookbook is very different from how you would do it on TV. And then also trying to choose which recipes told the best story. You know, to be honest, we have hundreds of recipes that we've put in the series, and not all of them are in the book. But even with so many to choose from, I had to write some new recipes for the book just to complete the story that the book was trying to tell. So the book is a very much a standalone thing. It tells the story. Well, I like to say that it completes the stories that we started to tell on TV, because quite often there's what we can put on air.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes there's actually a slightly better story that went on behind the scenes, that, you know, something that happened to the cameraman or something else that we experienced after we were trying to find a particular restaurant that doesn't work out in the storytelling of television, but works great in the storytelling of a cookbook.
For us to understand, how much research do you do and how hard it is? Because it's probably harder. People don't realize, but it's still a job. You do all your writing or your columns and everything else. But how much work do you do in a country far away like Scandinavia? How do you do this all the way from here, from Adelaide, I believe?
Well, it's the great deceit of television that on air it's supposed to look like I just turn up in a country and go and find all of these fun things to do, but we film for a bit over 3 months for each series of Destination Flavor, and it probably takes us double the amount of time before we leave to get some research done. So a little bit over 6 months of research before we start, and to varying degrees it can be helpful or difficult. For example, for Scandinavia, because we have a lot of references in English, and we had some Scandinavian-speaking people who could help us as well to find great stories there. That was a relatively easy place to research. But for China, for example, where a lot of the online resources are not accessible from Australia, and it's not a very transparent country from that regard, there was quite a lot of research that had to be done on the ground. You know, we were flying our fixers out to the far reaches of China before we had even set foot in the country to chase down stories that we were looking for the series.
You said Australia twice. Is it because there's so much food culture, so many different food culture around Australia alone, that you needed two series?
Yeah, absolutely. The first series of Destination Flavor, way back about 7 years ago now, was set around Australia. And then when we did Japan after that, and then the third series was Destination Flavor Down Under, where we travelled around Australia and New Zealand. And that was one of the most extraordinary trips that I've ever done.
So you've done, you said Australia, Scandinavia, and a lot of Asia.
Yes.
You have an Asian influence in your food from being a little kid, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. You know, particularly, I guess, Singapore and China, those two series draw a lot from my family heritage. My mother being from Singapore and China being, I guess, the origins of my family story on my father's side, at least, and actually my mother's as well. in a slightly different way. She lives there now, even though she is of English heritage.
Mm-hmm.
And in looking, I guess, through the prism of food at the history of China, it tells a great story of China, but then as we sort of travel through the country, it tells an even more interesting story. Maybe not more interesting, but for me, more interesting story of my family history as well. A lot of things like going back to my grandfather's village that he left 100 years ago to see what life was like there, or what life is still like there, was quite fascinating.
How was this? Yeah, you said fascinating. Was it confronting? Was it rewarding? How did you feel?
Absolutely. You know, it was. It's a tiny, tiny village. It's called.
In a huge country.
yeah. It's called Xiongze, which means little bear. So it's little bear village, and it's tiny. You know, it's probably 15 houses, some of them in better states of repair than others. And it's, you know, my side of the family has not lived there since my grandfather, not since he left, but since his parents passed away.
Okay.
And looking at that village, it's kind of like, he left there 100 years ago to go somewhere. And it's not like today where you can jump on a plane and pop back and Facebook and call your parents and things. That was a time where his family, all he'd ever known, every person he'd ever known, had lived in that village for 15 generations. You know, going back 1,000 years, they'd lived in the same village. And then all of a sudden, he's got to get on a plane, or on a boat, sorry,
mm-hmm.
where there's no planes to come back or take you around, no phones to call back home, and just get on a boat and go, not knowing if he'd ever see anything like that ever again. And in fact, he only ever returned to the village once before he passed away. So he left, kind of started his family on a incredible journey, and then saw his parents one more time before he died.
It's a incredible story.
Yeah, it's
you could do a Who Do You Think You Are?
Yeah, we could. I think we've just done it, but just in a food context.
Okay. you're all about the flavors.
Mm.
So we're talking here, yeah, Australia, Scandinavia, Asia. Is there any new flavors that are in your head and countries that could call, you know, improbable? The US, don't know. Is there any place, France, for that matter?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, Luke Nguyen's done a series on France recently, so I'm not sure if SBS would let me go back there again. Maybe I'll tag along with Gabriel.
Gabriel is going to, yeah.
When he does the tour again next year. I'd love to do that. But I speak to SBS about what we might do next, and there are so many options to go. I mean, do we go to somewhere like India? Do we try and do a larger journey that may not make particular sense in another sense, or do we trace down, do we follow the food rather than the location instead? You know, there's so many things that we can do, but we've still just got to get the China series done. Yeah. We finished filming that just a couple of months ago, and we're right now in the middle of editing all of it together, and I think it's going to be a fantastic series.
Absolutely. So we mentioned the book.
Mm.
You signed that book for our listeners. So if you're listening, you can actually comment underneath this video, and then afterwards, when we read everything through, some of you will be winning this this book, which is signed by Adam. Talk about the flavors. Mm. What makes a dish exceptional? That's a hard question. From good, awesome, to exceptional.
It depends. You know, I think a dish has to have meaning to it. You know, if and this is the odd thing about restaurants. If you go to a restaurant, generally the dish that you'll be eating in a modern restaurant will be something that a chef has come up with. And it could be amazing. It could have a lot of thought and technique and creativity behind it. But my preference and my style is to look for dishes that tell a deeper story of history and people and culture, and that's what Destination Flavor really is about. You know, it's a food series, classified as a food series, but when we sit down to make the show and to write the cookbook, we don't call it a food series. It's the reason we call the cookbook Destination Flavor People and Places is because we use the food to tell stories of those places and those people, and in the same way that music tells stories that's more important than the notes that are played, I like to think that food tells stories that are more important than the ingredients that go into it. You know, one of the great things about having done Destination Flavor across so many different countries, and you know, it's an odd cookbook to write when you put it together. It makes sense when you're doing one series in one place, and then the next year you might go to another place, and those series kind of stand alone. But when you can combine it all together in a cookbook, it's a bit eclectic. You know, if I'd gone to my publisher and said, hey, I would like to write a cookbook that contains recipes from Denmark, Japan, Sweden, Norway, China, and Singapore, and you would get...
How long would you last in the office?
Yes. I'd be like, oh, okay, sure. And then they'd just sort of quietly usher you out the door. But what surprises me the most about traveling to all of these places is seeing how similar the food is. And I don't mean really how similar it tastes, because, of course, some of them taste very, very different. But how similar, I guess, the place of food sits in that particular culture. You know, you have these dishes. And what's amazing about it is, even if you have never cooked any of these cuisines before, they're all very simple. And they're simple because people like things to be simple. You know, we don't like to spend hours and hours in the kitchen putting together dishes that are there to impress. You know, these are dishes that are there to taste good with the least possible effort that go into them, intended to feed hungry families and create memories from it. And that aspect of the human condition is common, whether you're in Japan or China or Sweden or Norway. And of course, what's interesting about it is the expression, you know, how it's expressed in a different way. So you might have a piece of stewed reindeer in Norway from the indigenous Sami people in the north of the country there. And yes, the ingredients are very, very different to Chairman Mao's pork from rural Hunan in China. But the idea and the place that that dish has is exactly the same in those two cultures. So something comforting that your mother has made for you and you enjoy, and when you get to the age where you're cooking for your own children, it's the kind of thing that you make for them.
Actually, what's your comfort food?
Hainanese chicken rice, page 223, I think.
Is it a staple in every single book? You put it there.
It's actually, this is the third time I've put it in a cookbook, but this being my sixth cookbook, it's also completely different to the other two times, because in all the years traveling around and cooking it more and more, you know, when we did the Singapore series, I connected with a cousin of mine who'd run a Hainanese chicken rice shop for 40 years in Singapore, and I'd never even met him before.
Okay.
And he's my cousin, but he's, you know, he's in his late 70s now. But because we are the same generation of the Chinese family. But this Hainanese chicken rice is now a combination of my grandmother's recipe that I grew up eating and that she taught me to make, my mother's influence of teaching me how to make the chili sauce for it, and then also my cousin now who brought his kind of professional expertise of running a chicken rice shop for so many years. So I think of all things, it may be my favorite food, but it's also the version of it in this book is the best. Now that I like to think that even though I've made it 1,000 times, I keep getting better at making it.
That's good. There's a lot of fashion in food, you know, like in everything. What rocks your boat these days? Is there something that you're particularly interested in and you want to explore a bit more?
One thing I'm really happy about is the increase in vegetable cooking that we're seeing in Australia now. I think through...
And good vegetables.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm not a vegetarian or vegan or anything like that, but...
Your son is rebelling against it.
Yeah, I wrote something like that on Twitter the other day. But it's... we are, in Australia, the highest meat consumers in the world. Mm-hmm. And that's nice. I like the taste of meat, you know. But I think in doing that, we've based so much of our cuisine around the taste of four different meats. We lose such a variety of vegetables that can add so much taste and so much flavor to the food that we make. And now you're seeing really interesting, you know, in the old days, people knew one way to cook cauliflower and one way to cook beans. And now you know, 10 ways to cook cauliflower and 10 ways to cook beans and all these other vegetables that we can now get in season. And what's great about it is they're the things that are most seasonal. We have fantastic seasons in Australia, but if we keep eating meat, you tend to make the same things over and over again because our meat is not as seasonal as our vegetables are. And so when you start to change the way you eat across a calendar year by following what's coming out of the ground in terms of focusing a little bit more on vegetables, then food gets really interesting.
Is that the future, do you think? You know, we went through this whole phase of 70s, 80s, which came up with some weird stuff.
Yes.
we can say that all around the world, including France.
Mm.
Is there a return from the 90s, the noughties, and now where we are just looking at a lot more local stuff, you know,
yeah,
with ideas that are from around the world? And then this is where books like this opens your mind about how others are doing things that you can find on your own doorstep.
Absolutely. I think we're globally, particularly in French cuisine, you know, through the 60s, 70s, 80s, you had Paul Bocuse and Nouvelle Cuisine having a huge influence on the world and the way that the world ate, which I think then led to the 80s and some of the 90s being a little bit weird, because yeah, we now had this new way of thinking about food, and things could be lighter and fresher and less complicated. But then people were kind of recoiling against that a little bit by making food that was more complicated and more fussy and more fancy. And I think as Nouvelle Cuisine has now become, I guess, the norm, and particularly in Australia, we've certainly embraced it. And then we've also added the Asian influence that we have so much of here in Australia, Australian food, and food around the world, because French cuisine has such a strong influence on the way people eat around the world, is now coming, I guess, through its adolescence. We're past Nouvelle Cuisine and we've accepted it, and it's now you're seeing a lot of really, really good food that is healthy and simple and tastes great. And it's a very exciting time to be someone who likes simple food, because simple food right now is better than it has ever been.
Absolutely. We had a few questions about your past.
Sure.
I mean, the main one is, once a master chef, are we always a master chef?
I don't think so. This is the worst title. I'm not even a real chef.
Now, we're coming through the whole process of MasterChef, you know, the whole TV,
yeah,
you won MasterChef.
Mm.
Is it always going to be with you as
course,
a fantastic experience, or is it hard to shed this behind and move on? Where are you at with MasterChef?
I mean, I cook very, very differently to how I did. You know, sometimes people come up to me in the street, they're like, oh, yes, I remember seeing you on MasterChef. When was that? Was that last year, year before? Like, no, it was 9 years ago. So, I mean, obviously that's how still a lot of people in the Australian public know who I am. They've seen me on the show. I think still the most watched television program. That particular episode where I won is the most watched television program in the history of Australian television, and is unlikely to be broken when you look at the ratings, how they are these days. But you know, I loved my experience on MasterChef. It was was fantastic fun, and that has got to be one of the most influential television programs globally of the entire world.
Yeah.
You know, from that Australian format, it was a show for a few years in England before it
completely different format.
Completely different. You know, it was three contestants and two judges over there, and it was for professional chefs rather than home cooks. But now that MasterChef Australia format has gone around the world again, and there are different styles of MasterChef popping up all over the world based on the Australian format, and the Australian one is shown around the world as well. I think in like 110 different countries or something. It's quite phenomenal. And I'm very proud to have been part of it.
And do you keep touch with the judges or other past MasterChef or people from your year? I'm talking about Justine and the Kylie Miller. We had all them in a program
here.
Yeah. You keep touch? Or do you catch up now and then sometimes? Or
yeah,
you just happen to cross paths?
We cross paths. I was just doing an event up in Broome with Marion 2 weeks ago. And I still see quite a lot of the guys there. We're all very busy these days, running around in all different directions and living all around the world. But
that's good, because it proves that there's been an impact on people's life.
I think so.
We've got to talk about Twitter.
Okay.
Just because now I know you a little bit more, and you've got a persona that is calm and quiet, and you know, but on Twitter, you're a bit more punchy. I mean, almost, do you do your own tweets?
Of course I do my own tweets. Yeah, no one would be that stupid other than myself.
I mean, but Trump is doing his own tweets. So.
For the most part, when they're coherent, I think sometimes it's not.
I'm just kidding, but there's a different tone, and you have a certain liberty, I guess, a bit more in Twitter. Do you feel the medium is helping you to express a different way?
Well, I think we're lucky in the days of modern media that people don't have to be one thing, because there are different avenues to express people, and people are complicated personalities. And maybe back in the day when you just had, you might be the most famous person in the world and you only had one television program or one movie in which you played the same kind of character, it might have been frustrating back then. But, you know, I like to crack a joke. I like to take a photograph. And so even if you go from Twitter to Instagram, you'll find my personality, different aspects of my personality coming out on those different platforms. Of course, it's, again, quite different to the way I might write in a magazine. And it's quite different to the way I might come across on screen in Destination Flavor. But it is all just me, I guess. Yeah.
So we are all idiots. We need to do better. You survived that that plane trip.
Yeah, I feel like I need to put that in context. You know, we have had an awful couple of weeks of people fighting with each other, and Twitter is the ultimate battleground for people to fight with each other over the smallest possible things. You know, what our Prime Minister puts a rap song on his Facebook account, or and we seem to have this perpetual unlimited capacity for outrage at things that have no bearing on our lives, and in doing so we ignore all of these much bigger issues that actually are more important. And so, you know, I just said we're all idiots, we all need to do better, because I find myself doing the same thing as well, and I have to bring myself in to check, because I'll read something online, I go, oh, I'm angry about that, and then I just think, well, why am I? It doesn't make any sense.
Sometimes you just need to breathe a bit.
Yes.
Once or twice more.
Step away from the screen.
Let's talk about something a bit more positive, your addiction to Eurovision.
Eurovision.
SBS is also another good part of Eurovision and bringing the Eurovision to the mass audience. When are we going to see you hosting this thing?
That is my
Shall we
dream
start
job.
A campaign? Shall we start a campaign, guys?
That is my absolute dream job. You know, I have to drive around to Joel Creasy's house and, you know, break his kneecaps or something. Then I'll end up in Tel Aviv next May. But Eurovision is absolutely fantastic. It is such a big part of Australia. You know, being so multicultural in this country, Eurovision just gives us an opportunity to celebrate that, even though we are not part of Europe and we're not pretending to be part of Europe, but we have such a strong European influence here. I did a special for SBS last year in the lead up to Eurovision, where I went to various European communities around Australia. And when you see how European communities celebrate Eurovision, you know, we went to a Swedish church in Toorak and a German community in Handorf, where I actually grew up in South Australia. And there is such a strong affinity for Eurovision, and it's that kind of sporting competitiveness that everyone can get behind, because sometimes you might love to show how passionate you are about your country, but you're not that into football, or you're not that into the Olympics. But cheesy music and costumes is something everyone can get behind.
There's everything for everyone in your vision. Absolutely. maybe one last word about this book. I'm not going to ask you to choose a favorite recipe because it's probably going to be impossible. But can you hint me towards one, maybe me, as I'm not a great cook, but I can cook?
Okay.
What should I try to be surprised about something from your book?
So there's a dish in there called Shandong chicken. Shandong chicken is from Shandong province in China, and that's the cuisine there. Lu Cai is known for being very well balanced in its saltiness, sweetness, sourness, and savouriness. And so the dishes are, again, quite simple, but also extremely, extremely flavorful. If most Chinese food in Australia is based on Cantonese cuisine, but Shandong or Lu cuisine is generally considered to be the most influential and the best of all the different Chinese cuisines, of which there are many, many, many. So Shandong chicken is traditionally made a little bit complicated, because it involves, you know, blanching and simmering and then deep frying a chicken. I do a roast chicken version in the book that is very, very simple, and it's just like roasting a chicken. Then you make the sauce and pour it over the top, but you can actually go even simpler than that and buy a roast chicken from the shop, mix the sauce over
the top. That's just plain lazy.
I don't know how you cook, Christoph, so I don't know what level I should be pitching this. So you can go the full version where you're deep frying a chicken, or you can go my personal preference, roast a chicken, make the sauce and pour it over, or you can go the very, very simple version, none of which is, I consider, cheating, but buy a roast chicken, mix the sauce and pour it over.
Okay, we get this. thank you, Adam. It's been a real pleasure to have you here in the program on SBS French. Thank you for making the trip, and best of luck with this book and the future series.
Amazing. Thanks for having me in.
That's it for us, guys.
Hear more stories in your language by visiting sbs.com.au.